All right, welcome back, y'all. This is the Semi-Americans Podcast. You got your host, Manny Flacco. No relation to Joe Flacco. Much better. Then you got D-O-Y-O-U. He lifts.
In the building.
Flexes every day. Flexing is a habit.
Brushing my teeth.
Get like him. Then you have Eddie the Petty Ramirez. Let's go. I'm trying to be less petty this year. But I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen. And then we have our special guest, Khaled Cabara. How's it going, Khaled?
I'm good. Who's talking?
Hey, that's Dr.
Ooh, Khaled. Dr.
Cabara.
Dr.
Cabara. You could also just say Khaled.
Khaled.
But I promise you, I'm just a normal human being.
Yeah. So, welcome, man.
Thanks. It's great to be here. Great weather outside.
Khaled and I went to medical school together, and now we're in residency together, and he's a year above me. I think he'll have a lot of interesting takes on a lot of things, and we look forward to getting his perspective on one thing that we've been missing is we've had a chance to discuss, like, the African perspective with my Ethiopian background, and of course, we look forward to having more guests from other parts of Africa. We have the El Salvadorian perspective from Eduardo's side, and then we have the somewhat South Korean perspective from Daniel's side.
Excuse
but now...
The American South Korean.
Yeah.
Sorry, American South Korean.
Get it right.
And, you know, it's time to diversify our bonds, as the Wu-Tang Clan says. So we're going
to... And who else to talk about diversity than somebody from Lebanon?
Yeah, there we go.
You got it, man. Center of the world, the Middle East.
So, first question for you actually is, where are you from? How do you answer that question? Somebody asked you that.
Yeah, that's for a lot of people, it's an easy question. For me, it's a little bit more complicated.
Okay.
You know, I would say I am from California, Southern California, Orange County.
You were born there?
I was not born there. I was born in Tripoli, Lebanon.
Okay. Not to be confused with the Tripoli and Libya.
Libya, exactly. Tripoli, Lebanon is about 85 kilometers north of Beirut. But I came to the United States only 11 months.
Oh.
Just 11. So, and then, you know, I went back and forth, and the cultures are kind of mixed up right now, but, well, not right now, forever. Mm-hmm. But as you guys have been talking on the podcast for a while, that you kind of have two identities, and they're not mutually exclusive. But when we talk about a melting pot, it's really a melting pot.
Hmm. Yeah, literally 50-50 split, right? Almost?
Yeah, like an ice cream swirl. Exactly.
Nice. Come on, man.
Like an ice cream swirl?
Yeah.
Nice.
It's like an...
Why'd you say they're nice?
Nice.
You really went Borat mode, bro.
You know, it's interesting. I did see an Instagram video about two different types of chocolate, and they melted it both, and they laid it on a parchment sheet, and then they got a toothpick or whatever stick, and then they swirled it around.
Uh-huh.
That's how I imagine my culture.
Like a marble swirl cake.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Like nice. A Dalmatian.
No, Dalmatian is different. Because Dalmatian, the reason I say it's different is because it's not discrete. This is what a lot of people have difficulty understanding. It's not two discrete cultures.
Like, it's not mutually exclusive.
No, you're moving, it's a spectrum.
Okay.
What you have...
We love spectrums here.
Exactly, it's a spectrum. And you moving through that spectrum, it's not... Oh, you know, sure, like one level of the spectrum is American, the other one is Lebanese or Korean or El Salvadorian or Ethiopian. But at the end of the day,
it's a sliding scale.
Yeah, you're moving through it. And you don't really consciously, on a day-to-day basis, really realize that. Other people would.
Gotcha.
You know, people from, you know, when you go back to your parents' original home country, they would recognize that you're not Ethiopian or you're not Lebanese or Korean or, you know, El Salvador. You come here... And you all of a sudden labeled right away, right out of the bat, you know, right, you're right. Lebanese. Everybody knows in my program I'm Lebanese, and I'm proud to be a Lebanese American. But am I truly 100% Lebanese? No. I go back to Lebanon, and they literally say the American is back.
Have you gone back to Lebanon?
Yeah, I've been to Lebanon multiple times.
When's the last time you went?
Last time I went, 2019, right after I graduated medical school.
Oh, so it's
But I actually also lived there. I lived there as well. I went to high school there. I actually went to high school in multiple different countries, but went middle school and high school in Lebanon.
So what was the reason that, like, you kind of moved over all around? It sounds like, you know, you were born in Lebanon, grew up in
California.
California.
Yeah, well, you follow your parents, okay, right? Your parents are out here, and it's natural for you to move out here. Your parents move to the Middle East for whatever reason, and it's natural for you to move with them back. You know, I like to, the analogy I give to my own personal journey, I think it's built in my personal genetics. If you look at the old inhabitants of Lebanon, the Phoenicians that lived there, you know, anywhere between 1200-1300 BC up until right before birth of Christ. And you would find that the Phoenicians are known to be travelers. They've traveled all around the Mediterranean. They have satellites all around the Mediterranean. They were traders. There's even recently in the National Geographic channel or magazine, they report that they found a tomb up in Maine that dated back to a Phoenician king that lived 800-900 BC.
In Maine,
United States of America. Yes. And so, what? So now what we're, oh. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a whole, if you read and read history about American history and not what's taught in schools, not what's, you know, what you learn here in high school or middle school, you'll be amazed. American history did not start with Christopher Columbus.
It didn't start with the United States. Because America, the continent,
right? It definitely did not start with the United States. I mean, there's a United States history that, you know, you can't. It's a big part of this continent's history for sure. But we're talking about way, way back. And, you know, when does it start? I mean, we read that people moved along the Bering Strait from between Russia and the current, you know, Alaska, and that's how the first people inhabited this continent, maybe, yes. That what happened between then and Christopher Columbus?
Yeah, right.
What happened, you know, look at, there's evidence in Cuba of mosques that were built by the Arabs that lived in Spain. So Arabs have come to the Americas way before Christopher Columbus. And who were the people that guided Christopher Columbus to the Americas? So, you know, the point I'm trying to make is, I'm not trying, you know, talk about Christopher Columbus here, but there's a lot of history that predates that.
Yeah.
And
so let's talk a little bit about your history. So grew up in California, moved to middle school. I mean, didn't move to middle school. You went to middle school in California, and then high school, I guess you said you started traveling around a little bit.
Yeah. So,
if you don't mind me asking, what led to your parents immigrating here or having to leave Lebanon?
Yeah. My father came here. He went to college here. His entire family's here. I think his uncle came here, I don't know, maybe in the 50s. He went to college here, and everybody else just came with eventually. Then he married my mom, and they moved here. But I was born in Lebanon, yeah, and I moved down here, or moved to the Americas in the United States when I was 11 months. Went to kindergarten, first years of schools you do, and then there's 1 year I lived in Lebanon as a child, and I remember I didn't speak Arabic. I had only one friend. His name is Luai. And the reason he was my friend is because he was the only one that spoke English around me. And that was in the middle, early 90s, when Lebanon just came out of the Civil War. I remember we were landing in the airport in Beirut, and I looked around, dude, and it's all like concrete buildings and splattered with bullet holes. I don't know what bullet holes meant then. I thought those were broken buildings, and I was like, is this where I'm coming to? But I was excited still, because it was the first time I met my mom's side of the family who still lived there. I ended up staying there for about nine months, but I enrolled in school there, and it was, dude, and we're talking about a cultural shock. That was a cultural shock. I think younger kids experience much worse or much more intense cultural shock than as an adult. Because as an adult, you know what to expect. You know, right. You're going to a different culture. As a child, you don't know this is different. I go there. I mean, I'm watching cartoons. It's in French.
You're like confused all the time.
Yeah, Obelisque and Asterix and Tintin. These are all Belgian cartoons, and they're all in French. Yeah, and then it was. But it's interesting because it does shape you as a child. You'd be amazed what experiences as a child shapes you as an adult. I mean, look at Mozart. We think of Mozart's greatest achievement was at a younger age.
Yeah.
You know, and the reason he became, you know, just, I know this is a tangent, but the point I'm trying to make is, you know, well, Mozart, as a child, he would just sit there and listen to his dad teach his older sister music. And that's how he absorbed it.
Right.
So as a child, you're going through the same experience. You just don't know it until later on in age.
So how do you think that impacted you? That 9 months. You were what, maybe 8 or 9 at the time?
Yeah, it's an experience. I don't know if I can tangibly explain how it impacted me, because it wasn't just a one-time experience. I did come back to the States and then went back to Lebanon. So it's the whole package, you know, and I can talk about the whole package rather than just that 1 year. I mean,
so you were back and forth maybe once a year, once every other year or so?
Not exactly. So I stayed there for whatever 9 months and then came here in the United States. And then we went back in the early 2000s, late 90s, and enrolled in school there. There's a couple of years where I actually lived in Saudi Arabia and first 2 years of high school, but did middle school and high school and the rest of high school in Lebanon, and then came back for college. So there's a lot of moving back and forth.
What was the reason why? Is that something that you could talk about? The reason why you guys moved back and forth, like your parents?
Job, my dad's job.
Okay.
Pretty much. It was, he used to work in California, and then some company wanted an American guy in Saudi Arabia.
What does he do?
He's an electrical engineer.
Okay.
So basically he was training a lot of the engineers in Saudi Arabia on stuff that is beyond my expertise, power plants and how to supply people with electricity.
Nice.
I'm more of a biology guy. We can talk biology, chemistry if you want.
Gotcha.
So what's the situation like in Lebanon currently? I mean, you mentioned earlier that when you're initially leaving, Lebanon had just come out of the civil war. And you have to travel back, you know, about 2-3 years ago. How do you see it? Where do you feel like the country's headed? And I mean, that's a very complex answer, I'm sure, but just like big picture wise.
I don't know, man. I mean, this is a very complicated and complex question, to be honest with you. I mean, if you watched Lebanese TV, they don't even know where they're heading, you know, and it's, I think Lebanese politics is a very unique politics. And if you really are in any sort of political science major, sit down and try to get a glimpse of an understanding of Lebanese politics, because people in Lebanon don't even understand it. There's so much things going on. I mean, Lebanon is a very diverse country and religiously diverse, as you noted earlier. So, you know, and it's not just big religions. It's not whether you're Muslim or Christian. It's more about sect, right? So it's not enough to be Christian. It's what type of Christian are you? Are you Maronite? Are you Orthodox? Are you Greek Orthodox? Are you Russian Orthodox? Are you Armenian Orthodox? What type of Muslim are you? There's Sunnis, Shiites, and then you have the Druze. So it's a very religiously diverse environment. And of a population of 4 to 6 million, you interact with everyone over there. So it's you learn a lot.
It's funny that you say a population between 4 to 6 million.
Yeah.
And I was doing some research before this. So there's 4 million people that are officially considered Lebanese and about 2 million people that are immigrants, correct?
Roughly, yes. Yes, that is correct. There's 18 million Lebanese around the world.
Right, right, which is crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, I thought El Salvador was crazy because 33% of Salvadorians are outside of the outside of El Salvador, but like that's insane.
Yeah, that's insane.
Like
that's
more than twice as much Lebanese live outside of Lebanon. Yeah.
And that's why I was telling you, I think it's in the blood, the Phoenician blood.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're travelers. And, you know, no matter where you are as a Lebanese, you always have that nostalgia for the land. You might not ever go back, but you always have that nostalgia for the land.
So do you consider Lebanon home?
I think home is where family is. Right now, my family's in Southern California, so that's what home is.
Okay, but you said something along the lines of there's a... What did you say? There's like a desire for the land, or there's a thought of the land?
Always.
Of Lebanon?
Always. And that is all over the Middle East. That is not just for Lebanon. That is all over the Middle East. I mean, you look at... I can't fully speak to the Syrian refugees, but if you ask a lot of the Syrians outside of Syria, the refugees, they all dream about going back to Syria. It is an inherent identity built in that you always desire the land over there.
Okay,
it's
so
a Middle Eastern thing.
You hop off the plane. What's your immediate feeling? Because this is something that I've envisioned myself, because I'm like, I'm going to travel back to Ethiopia, God willing, pretty soon. And I'm like, I can't imagine. Like, I try to envision getting off the plane and what kind of like emotions I'm going to feel. Like, you know, you try to imagine it. What do you feel when you hop off the plane? You're in Beirut International Airport.
Dude, my journey does not start when I hop off the plane.
Okay.
It starts when I get on a plane to Beirut. Because that...
Take us through that.
So what's that experience like? So... last time I was there, 2016, I went there with a friend of mine from California, and you know, over here you don't have utensils on the planes and whatnot. And even if you're flying to Europe, not a whole lot of utensils. You get to Istanbul or any European hotspot, and you're flying to Lebanon. And I usually fly, if I'm going to Lebanon, a lot of times it's Middle Eastern Airlines. Immediately, you just feel that Lebanese vibe. You start getting metallic utensils. The food they serve is Lebanese food. And you're surrounded by a lot of Lebanese on that plane. And everybody is an immigrant, and they're all going back to Lebanon. And we have that general feel of excitement. Now, that's my personal experience, that I've been on those planes going to Lebanon. So that builds up. I start talking to the flight attendants, maybe not, a little bit flirtatious in Lebanon, in Lebanese. But back, you know, and I get off the plane, and there's an excitement. That excitement over the next, you know, few days, it depends on what kind of mentality and mindset you're going with. And that sometimes could fade away when you get involved with the day-to-day struggles, because people over there are struggling. I mean, there's no electricity. They're doing a better job at it, but then you can always go to the countryside, and that rekindles. And honestly, not, you know, of course I'm biased, but objectively speaking, it is a beautiful country.
Like geographically.
Geographically,
the people, everything, stuff too,
everything,
yeah.
Everything,
sure.
Everything,
the culture,
everything about it is beautiful. And I think Anthony Bourdain talked about Beirut very eloquently, and he said, if there's one city in the world that you must visit, it is Beirut. It's organized chaos. You don't understand what's going on, and you know it's chaotic, but you love it, and you just feed off of it. So yeah, enough publicity.
Yo, this man is about to be an ambassador.
Yeah, for real.
Travel guide.
Yeah.
Dude, if you go, man, I'll definitely show you around.
Yeah.
We'll go to the cedars of Lebanon.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Jesus Christ came from Nazareth and blessed them. It's in the Bible.
Yeah.
Lebanon.
They have it on 66. The flag.
Yeah.
The Lebanese flag has a cedar
mentioned
on it.
Mentioned over 60 times in the Bible. Yeah. Lebanon.
Yeah.
So it's a very, there's a lot of the entire Middle East generally, it has a strong biblical context, and it's not just in the Christian faith, in all three Abrahamic religions really, and particularly the Levant, when I talk the Levant, is Lebanon, Syria, Palestine, and Jordan, that area. And I truly think, despite what we see on TV and despite what we, you know, all the troubles they're going through and turmoils and whatnot, I do believe it is blessed. And not because my parents are from there, but when you look at all different Abrahamic faiths.
Right, it stems
there. It's impossible, you know, if, you know, I'm a spiritual man, and I believe if these religions are talking about these prophets that walked on those, on that soil, that soil has to be blessed.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I do believe there's a lot of other prophets all around the world and all throughout humanity that we might not know of.
Right.
Because I think, you know, we're going into a little bit of theology here, but I think just to end it there, but every people had a prophet, regardless of, you know, color, type, whatever.
Or belief.
Everybody had a prophet. And I think it's a spiritual prophet. Like, it was sent from a higher being to educate and to
enlighten these people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're set if we want to go to Lebanon. You're saying when we go on our podcast tour,
hey,
Finland, Lebanon, South Africa, definitely. But, you know, we're going to have to check out Lebanon too. And Cal's going to have to take us around, you know.
Just keep your American passport on you and nobody would touch you.
Yeah. No, but talking about religion, like, did you grow up with a specific religion?
I did grow up with a specific religion, but I was exposed to multiple religions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the big two faiths in Lebanon are Muslim and Christianity, and it's about 50-50, roughly speaking. Yeah. When I was in school there, I went to a Presbyterian school. It was established in 1868 or 86. And by American missionaries. And I remember earlier on, they would take us to the chapel almost every day. And we would sing, you know, all the chorals and, you know, everything that had to do with Christmas and whatnot and what have you. So I was exposed to all of that. I had a friend of mine, I'm not going to name him, but when we first met, he found out that I'm originally Lebanese, or my parents were Lebanese, and he asked me, have you been to a mosque? And I said, yes, and I've been to churches. I've been to mosques, churches, synagogues, you name it. I've been all of them. And I think being Lebanese, despite the strife that people have over there, you do come out with, especially if you're living out in the West, with a better understanding of different types of people, and you're better to able to deal with different types of people of different backgrounds. And
you're able to build empathy, right? Yeah. Through your exposure to different cultures. Yeah. I feel like that's probably...
No, obviously you always have someone who doesn't from anywhere. You know, there's always exceptions. But I think the general rule is you have that because of that environment people lived in and grew up with.
Gotcha. So high school was that Presbyterian school that you're talking about? Or
Middle school and grade 11 and 12. Grade 9 and 10, I did those in Saudi Arabia. Yeah.
Okay. Were you going to an English school in Saudi Arabia?
It was an international school. My principal was Mr. Barnhouse from Kansas or Kentucky.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, he must have been getting bank over there.
I remember, I forgot her name. Kansas. She taught grade 11 and 12 American history. But this American woman... she just stopped there for like a couple of years, probably made, I don't know, like 300K. I don't know how much, but they make a lot. And there was a lot of teachers from South Africa, from the US, from England.
Mostly white.
If they were American or UK, yes. South African, we had a mix.
Okay.
Yeah. We had white, black, Indian from South Africa.
Do you have any siblings?
Yeah, I have. In Lebanese, like to have a lot of kids.
Okay.
Yeah.
Big families.
We're baby makers.
How many siblings?
Four.
Four?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
All boys, right?
No, oh. there's a girl.
Oh, you have a sister. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I didn't even know that.
You got to mix it up a little bit.
And where do you fall in that?
Where do you think I fall?
The lineage.
I've been speaking for 27 minutes. Where do you think I fall?
Second or third.
Yeah.
What
do you think? Yeah, I think he's like on the older side of the half.
I'd say like out of five, probably two or three.
Okay. There's only four. There's only
four. You can add an extra sibling just in case.
No, I'm saying it's five of you guys,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, five in total? Oh, five in total. Yeah. Out of five in total.
Four, you said three. Oh, okay. Four, wow. Siblings. So we definitely going to edit that part out because Eduardo and I can't do math. Yeah. We made fun of Daniel for it. I apologize, bro. Yeah. My fault. Okay. My fault.
I think you're either two or three. Yeah.
And you said?
I said one or two.
Y'all got to like pick one, man. Come on.
Two.
Yeah. They're two. Both saying two. You're two?
What do you think?
I mean, you already said yes. So.
What do you think?
I thought you were the oldest.
I am the oldest.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, the sister threw a wrench in my plans because I was like, I thought he only had brothers because I haven't really... Because we've talked about your brothers before.
Yeah.
Because they're following in his footsteps as well, so...
Yeah, so... Or I'm falling into their footsteps.
Well, I get it. Yeah.
Wait. So I had a question about high school, though, in Lebanon.
Yeah, hit me, dude.
Because I know there's a lot of French influence, a lot of American influence, a lot of Saudi influence, right? Were you taught, like, all three languages there? What kind of was the schooling process over there?
Khaled low-key knows a lot of languages.
Yeah,
like no like for real, he'll talk to, I've seen this in action, he'll say something to someone, you're Russian, and then he'll start saying phrases in Russian. I'm like, where are you coming up with this from?
No, the funny thing is I was watching this thing, and because most people or like most younger people now in Lebanon are trilingual or at least bilingual, right? They'll start mixing like Arabic and French.
So it's like their own dialect kind of thing?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's like Creole almost, where like
a
Haitian,
little bit.
Yeah, it's like Haitian French.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. English, French, Arabic, all the good. It's not like Creole, but because you do say Arabic words.
Okay.
And then there's an English word, French. And then there's a French word.
Like, what is the introduction? You say hi.
Hi, which is in English.
Uh-huh.
Kifak, which is. Hey, don't roll your eyes. I know what you're thinking.
I had to edit that. But.
No, it is kifak, and then
we're children,
and so, and then sava. Hi, kifak sava.
You say all that together?
Yeah, I mean it's a lot of times you would hear it.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I'm not gonna say it's 100%, but it's common. That is an example of the normal conversation you'd hear people talk on a daily basis. Might not be exactly hi, kifak sava. But people would sprinkle English and French into their daily conversations.
Pretty cool.
Yeah,
pretty cool.
So in high school, you got a mix of everything.
So, dude, interesting, man. It's not as simple as that. When I went there, as I told you, I didn't speak a word of Arabic. Luckily or unluckily, I don't know the way you see it. But I only lived there for 8 months. So I came back here, and then when I went back. Still didn't know much Arabic. I'm able to converse, but...
So your parents didn't teach you Arabic at home?
Over here in the United States, I don't really remember. But I remember when the first time I went there, I didn't speak it. I might have understood it a little bit, but I just didn't speak it. And when I went back for the second time, I learned Arabic through school. And whatever grade I was, doing... They would take me out from every single class that's taught in Arabic. And I would go to, Arabic as a second language. And I'm starting from this. From
like their ESL.
Yeah, exactly. And on the record, I hated the teacher. Dude, I hated the teacher. She had bad breath. And
people with bad breath is terrible.
And she did not like kids from...
Was she like condescending? Because like,
yeah, I heard her say once, these Australian and American kids come here and they think this and that.
Mm.
I understood that,
yeah. But it seems like you're
but overall
getting better.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I heard you earlier speaking to your mom in Arabic.
Oh yeah, I speak fluent. I can read, write.
Okay,
dude, I passed for the record the Lebanese national exam. Portion, the Arabic portion.
Oh, wow.
So okay. Nobody can take that away from me.
Oh, okay. So you, so it basically in high school, that's when you like kind of realize that, like, hey, I want to learn this. I want to learn the language, learn how to, like, read and write?
No, you learn it because you're forced to learn it as you grow, you know, going through middle school.
Uh-huh.
As an adult, you start to realizing, like, yeah, you know, this is important. This is why, you know, I'm thinking about my kids. You know, the one regret I have is not learning more French.
How many kids do you have?
No, I don't have any kids.
Oh, because you mentioned you were thinking about your kids. Of.
Yeah, you're thinking about your kids.
Yeah, so.
Well, you know, it's important to think about your kids in the future. And this is very important.
Emmanuel doesn't think about kids.
His kids think about him.
Yeah.
His baby kids.
I can't stand. All right. I'm not even going to. Every week, the listeners always know how frustrating, yeah. You guys are.
All right, we've been talking serious. Let's spice it up a little bit.
I do
want to double back to the question Daniel was asking earlier about your siblings, because go ahead, Daniel, because you're in the middle of asking that question.
I mean, in terms of you and your siblings, right, since you were the firstborn, are there any differences, like, you know, especially since, like, you've come to the realization, like, hey, I wasn't taught Arabic growing up, right? So is that something that you tried to help your parents, like, instill in your younger siblings, or, like, what are some, like, you know,
differences in, like, the upbringing kind of?
Yeah.
And in terms, are they more American?
But what are the age differences to start, I guess?
What's the range?
2, 2, 2, 2, and then between 4 and 5 is 6.
Dang, well planned.
We all know Arabic.
Okay.
We all speak it. I think we all read it.
So it sounds like you were, like, the test dummy.
Yeah.
The guinea pig.
Yeah. The guinea pig.
No, I mean, when I moved back here for college, they stayed in Lebanon.
Oh, okay.
And they all graduated there.
Got it.
Except my youngest brother, who actually went to all of middle school and high school here in the States. And his upbringing is a little bit different than the rest of us. And I think that's just a natural process when you have kids.
Mm-hmm.
You are a little bit more strict on the eldest.
Mm-hmm.
And then more lax. Not that you do not care as a parent,
mm-hmm.
but more lax with the youngest. And, you know, you start having the influence of your older
children.
Children, yeah.
Right, because you were rebelling.
I was going to say offsprings.
Offsprings, let's go. So I heard something about Lebanese people being the biggest party people.
Dude, hell yeah, let's go.
Out in the Middle East, right?
Let's go.
So you did high school over there.
Yeah.
So you didn't get the high school experience over here, which...
I can't speak about my party days. You know, my parents might be listening to this.
He's talking like his party days are over.
Yeah, no. I heard some recent
stories. Look at his eyes are getting shifty. Nah, Daniel was there too.
No, he said he wanted witnesses. To get spicy.
No, we Lebanese people, generally speaking, like to have fun.
Yeah.
They like to party.
Don't the Saudis come to Lebanon to, like...
He used to a lot. Yeah. Yeah, but Emmanuel knows. Emmanuel is with me in the same residency program. He knows that we like to light it up.
Wait, light what up?
Dude, the whole world, man.
The whole world.
Hey, Daniel's seen it in action, too, man.
The whole world.
This is the first time I've ever seen, and I've been out with Daniel a couple times, but first time I've ever seen him just, like, watch. Like, he was just kind of like... This is so interesting. Like, it was like he was watching a reality TV show kind of thing. When you see Khaled in action...
Dude, I used to party in Ibiza, trying to impress Avicii.
Nice. R.I.P.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
So,
I've never been to Ibiza.
No American high school experience, but then you got here, went to college. You were already partying in Lebanon, I imagine.
Dude, that same kid that grabbed... Okay, so a little bit more, just to give you a little bit of background. I was a troublemaker in high school.
Yeah?
Yeah. I used to... I got kicked out from every... English class possible. The principal asked for my parents to come because they wanted to expel me because I was a troublemaker.
And they texted you and said, just don't get caught.
No. And then I told my mom, and my mom, her having to take care of 5 kids.
I was going to have to edit that.
Told me that she didn't have time. So I went the next day, got kicked out of class again.
Wow. What are you doing to get kicked out?
Dude, I just did not care.
like class clown type
thing? No, not a clown. I just did my own thing in class. Whatever you think I did,
so
I did.
So nothing's changed.
Yeah. But here's the thing. I was the youngest in class. I was the youngest. And I had the highest grade.
Nice.
And the teacher did not know that. She brought me, took me aside one day. She's like, Khaled, you're how old? You're like 18, 19. I was 16. And she said, you know, you need to start focusing and studying and, you know, you're failing the class. And I said, no, I'm 16 and I have the highest grade in the class. And she wanted to show me my grade. She opened her whatever grade book, scrolled down to my name. And there you go, the highest in the class.
How does she confuse that?
My actions in class.
Yeah, no, that's true. That, and you know, I don't know if that's like part of the teaching curriculum all over the world or something, but dude, sometimes like you're so far ahead in your classes that like, I mean, you just start messing around and.
But let me tell you, the curriculum in Lebanon,
yeah,
it is difficult.
Yeah,
it is difficult. I came here knowing organic chemistry. So I started college here knowing organic chemistry. Organic chemistry is taught here. When is organic chemistry taught, Emmanuel?
Like in sophomore, junior year?
Yeah.
It depends on when you
get
it.
Yeah, Daniel was right next to me when I was taking it.
I knew organic chemistry, at least the first part of organic chemistry, graduating 12th grade in Lebanon.
Damn, I took basic chemistry 3 times.
I knew calculus.
On purpose?
Graduating. I knew calculus graduating high school from Lebanon.
Yeah, I noticed that a lot of high schools internationally, they teach to a higher level.
So it was not easy. And to be honest with you, because I'm a science guy, I'm more focused on sciences, and that interested me. Mm. So I focus in class. I didn't clown and get kicked out of any of the science classes. But when it came to, or the Arabic class, for the record, because I didn't know Arabic. And, you know, I had a crush on the teacher too, but
wait, this is a different teacher because you spoke about the teacher with bad breath.
No, this is different. This is the one that actually taught the class. She taught me in 7th grade, and that's when my crush first developed. And then she taught me again in 12th grade, and she took me aside, and Ooh. She's like, Khaled, you know, I really need you to pass the government exam. And I said,
I'll pass. Miss for you.
F, do not worry, I got you.
She's
Lebanese.
Yeah. Okay. Have you dated anyone outside of your culture?
I plead the fifth. That's what you're about to say.
Yeah, I plead the fifth, dude. Yeah,
oh.
But yeah, I've dated.
No, time out. He wanted to get, what was it? He wanted to get quote unquote spicy. Go ahead.
Yeah, we haven't even gotten into the party.
We'll get spicy, guys. We'll get some. You guys want to get spicy? We'll get spicy.
Let's turn it up.
I think, you know, living in this country, and first and foremost is why are you dating? You have to figure out why you're dating. And then you want to start to explore your own self. What do you like and what your values are?
Amen.
Because your values, believe it or not, are different than your parents' values.
Have you been doing a lot of exploring?
Yeah, dude. They're different from your parents' values. They might be similar. You might be sharing common ground with your parents. But they are different. We live in a different time. The woman you're going to find is different than your grandmother. And I hope she's different than your grandmother.
It shouldn't be your grandmother.
No, I mean because, you know, in the 1920s, it's different than 2020.
So tell us why you date.
There's a couple of reasons why. This is not for me. It's a general.
Eduardo's asking you. Yeah. You know, this is so nice that it's happening to someone else. Can I just say that? Because usually this is what they do to me.
All right. Yeah. So usually this does happen to Emmanuel, but we're not talking about him today, unless he wants to confess to some relationship updates. But
no, I want to hear that.
But Khaled, what do you date for?
You know, I think this is a much more complex question than to be simply answered. I think it all depends on the time and era.
Well, let's answer it simply for you. Why do you date? In one sentence. To have fun?
To meet a spouse?
Love.
the potential of love or
moments? Moments of love?
Nah, you gotta, come on, you gotta elaborate.
Love, dude. I think that's pretty elaborate.
You have a lot of love to give.
Everybody's looking for love. I think that's what we need more of in the world, love.
You've been in love before?
I have.
Admittedly, how many times do you feel like you've been in love?
I fall in love every day, Emmanuel.
Oh my God. Why do y'all answer the same way? Do y'all go to medical school to not answer questions? First off, did they go to law school? Lawyer school?
Come on now, come on. First off, you have never asked me that question on the record. Two, I never responded and said I fall in love every day. I do
not. No, but you do respond in like non-answer.
Let me tell you this. I think love.
No, tell us how many times you've fallen in love. Honestly, straight up.
I mean, it's all, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but I think probably twice.
Twice?
Yeah.
And when were those instances? At like, how old were you? What period of your life?
The first one, I was very young. That was back in college.
Okay.
The second one was, I would say I was more mature and an adult.
When was this?
Yeah. Well, let's say within the last couple of years, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So did you think you were going to get married that first time you fell in love?
Yeah.
Do you believe in marriage differently now?
No.
No?
No. What do you mean differently? Do you know what I believed then?
No, but I mean,
What is your definition of marriage?
Hey, we were on this last time, right? What is the definition of marriage?
Yeah, well, what's your...
My definition of marriage, I mean, it should be... it should be for love.
What is marriage?
Legal.
I mean, people love each other without getting married.
Yeah.
So what is marriage?
Just legal.
So is that important?
No.
Okay. It's not important to you.
Is it important to you?
It is important to me. But why is it not important to you?
Because if somebody loves you...
You do not want the government to be involved in your life, yeah?
Yeah, that's... No, not necessarily, but...
So less government?
There's no need for somebody to be legally bound to you.
There's no need for you to be contractually bound to someone else.
Yeah, I don't want a contract.
Who oversees the contract? The government. So you want less government.
You don't want the government. I mean, you oversee the contract yourself, but... It's just another layer of being tied to
something. So what is marriage? You said a contract. Who formulates this contract? Is it the government? And you said you don't want marriage, you don't want a contract, you don't want the government involvement in who you choose and how you define the relationship. That's what I'm hearing you're saying.
I guess that makes sense.
Small government and big relationships.
Yeah. So what does marriage mean to you, Kevin?
Marriage is a contract. It doesn't have to, in my definition, it doesn't have to be a legal governmental contract. But marriage comes in different forms. We got civil marriages, we got religious marriages, we got a hybrid. And I think depending on the culture that you abide with, the culture that you and your spouse want to have, you choose on the kind of marriage you guys want.
So what's that mean to you?
Well, it really depends on the lady I'm with.
So,
because marriage is not one way. It's not just me. There's another human being involved here.
Do you believe in prenups?
Do I believe in prenups? I think there's a place for it. But again, this is a conversation and discussion we have with our spouses. Do I believe against a prenup? No. Do I, you know, it's not about believing or disbelieving.
What if the spouse leaves the decision up to you?
See, here's the thing. That could be all discussed in the contract that you formulate with your spouse. Now, my contract does not necessarily need to be a governmental contract. But I think the reason why I like the contract is because you put your agreements, what she agrees to, what you agree to, on a paper, written, signed, sealed, delivered. 10 years from now, 15 years from now, you want to do something, she wants to do something different from what you guys agreed. And that is okay. Those things happen.
Yeah, people change.
People change. But also you want to protect your right and you want to protect her right. It's all about rights here. The contract and the marriage is not for love. We fall in love. We don't need a contract to fall in love. But it's more to protect.
Okay, so do you believe that marriage is for a lifetime?
As I said earlier, people do change. And you go into a marriage thinking that it is for the lifetime. That is the intention. You fall in love with someone. But also, 10 years, 15 years down the road, our love changes sometimes. And our values change. And people change. The person you married is no longer the same person 10 years down the road. So while I advocate for a stable marriage and try to, you know, figure out the differences and fight for the marriage, fight for the kids, but sometimes it's inevitable to end it. And maybe that is the best way. And that is the least, you know, again, I'm not... When you look at society today, there's a huge divorce rate. I don't think that is natural. I think, and I don't know why. There's people who are much smarter than me that have done a lot of studies trying to figure that out. But I think we can all agree there's something going on that results into that. In the hospital, I see a lot of older folks who have been married for 60, 70, 50 years with one person, and I ask them, what's the magic trick? Compromise, listening. It's okay to have different views. I think in today's world, we fall in love. We don't understand what falling in love is. We don't understand what being with another person is. And I think that we in the 21st, our generation and the generation that comes behind us, we're pretty confused.
Yeah, I was talking to Manny. Actually, I sent this to the group chat. I said, you fall out of love when you stop trying to understand the other person. What are your thoughts on that?
I think our current conception of love is we fall out of love when the other person is no longer convenient to us. When the other person is not doing something that we like or not serving our needs. I'm not saying that is love, but I'm saying that's our current perception of love in the 21st century. And I think that's why you have higher divorce rates and a lot of, you know, whatever it is going on in society today. But I think the true love builds up and transforms within a marriage, within a bond, if you will. I'll use the word bond when I'm talking about love. Because marriage, to me, is protecting the rights of the woman and the rights of the man on how they define a bond when it comes to things outside of feelings. But when we're talking about feelings, I think the feelings evolve. She starts to get to know you more. You start to fall in love with the way she walks. Intangible things that are not, no longer, you know, just the way she giggles and the way you drink your coffee. And then that evolves even further than that. People who are married for 65 years do not have the same love they had when they were 21.
In their honeymoon phase.
Yeah. Well, but you know what they still have?
Trust.
Trust. Passion. They're passionate for one another.
They understand. Or are they just comfortable?
What's wrong with being comfortable?
If it's not what you want, but you're comfortable in a situation, whereas without
you mean,
that.
You mean complacent?
I think that statement is contradictory to me. If I am in a situation that I do not want, I'm not comfortable. Have you ever been in a situation that you do not want and you're comfortable in it?
That's true. That's a bold statement.
That's true. But at the same time, after 40 years, I mean, you've got to think, right? Like, you've been in situations where it's like, dang, maybe I should get out of this.
After the first fight, you fight with a girl for the first time and you say you want to, that's it. See, when you do a bond with someone, okay, you fall in love, you hang out, and then let's say you do get married. The marriage between two individuals involves also the family on many, many occasions, and most occasions. So your responsibility as a married couple or as an individual in a married couple is not just towards your partner, which you have a huge responsibility towards, but also towards your family, your kids that you're going to have, the other person's family. So it's a lot more.
Is it though? Are you marrying the person or are you marrying the family? Because like,
You're marrying the family. So you're marrying the family and the person. You're in love with the person, but you are marrying the entire family.
So
that is my opinion.
Would you, if you love the person, but the family didn't love you, or you didn't have a good relationship with the family?
Why don't you have a good relationship? You don't choose your family.
And they don't get to choose you.
Yeah. But you're forced to function within a family unit. I mean, sure, you can, you know, leave and get out of here, but that's not my Lebanese American culture.
Gotcha.
Very Mediterranean, man. We're very Mediterranean. The family unit is important. My best memories growing up
are with your family.
Well, my family is a little bit cliche, but sure. But my best memories, I'm going to tell you this, is sitting on the ground while looking at my grandmother on the couch with some of my cousins. And it was in Lebanon. We don't have, the electricity's out, so we're on a candle. And just listening to her telling us stories about her childhood. The effect that has on a child is invaluable. I was listening to this famous comedian. What's his name? Kevin Hart. And he was talking about his father. And he said his father...
His father used to beat him?
Well, I didn't hear that part. That's not the part I was going to say. But he was talking about how his father went to jail and he really wasn't there for him.
Yeah.
But when Kevin Hart became successful and had a lot of money, bought his father a house, bought his father a car, gave him his father a monthly allowance, and told his father that I don't care about me. I want you to be the best grandfather you could be to my kids. Now that relationship between a grandparent and a grandchild, it is tremendous. You can't buy that.
So if you have kids, are you teaching them things about your culture? Like, do you feel like you're going to pass on? Obviously, you know, you just mentioned your grandmother and your family.
And how important is it to meet somebody from like your same cultural background?
I guess answer that question first, because then I guess naturally like kids would follow. So.
I'm open. In terms of a relationship, I'm open with, you know, it depends on the person. That's what's important to me. The person has to accept who I am the way I'm going to accept who she is.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And living in America, being Lebanese American, even if I find another Lebanese American, we might have similar backgrounds, but we're also different culturally. Her experiences are different than mine. And that is across the board. You know, so to answer your question, I'm open to whatever I'm looking for. I'm more interested in the person and the values that person carries and holds. To answer Emmanuel's question, it is important for me to pass down my experiences. And that's why I would need, you know, a partner that understands that, is able to understand that, whether she shares similar background or not. But there's also a way of doing it. There's a way of passing down your culture, who you are to your kids, particularly if it's a, you know, whether it's an interracial or different cultural marriage, there's a way of doing it. And then I think anything by force is not going to lead anywhere. It's going to repel people than rather have them. Because, your kids are going to have a different culture than you are. Whether you were born here, there, them here, it doesn't really matter. They're going to have a different culture than you do. What you want to do is pass down your experiences through demonstration, through little stories, and not lecture them. Just like the way my grandmother told us her stories when she was a kid. It's all about that essence, that vibe, and good vibes only.
Good vibes only.
Yeah.
I get that. I get that your values are important, right? So, like, you'd never date a girl that wasn't really family oriented, kind of had her own thing going on, very independent from her family, because you would want to have that same familiar value to that, right?
I think you date to figure these questions out. Would I settle down and build the family with someone who's not family oriented? No.
So,
but you don't know the person until you sit down and you talk to them and you hang out with them and you start understanding them. I think that is the essence of dating. It's not just to, you know, just for the sake of passing time. It's really to understand the person. I think that's what we are missing.
That is true.
These days.
Yeah.
I mean, I go out on dates and I rarely get any questions asking me about, you know, unless it's either an interrogation or it's, you know, no one is interested in who I am as a person.
To everyone that's listening that wants to date, call in.
Hey, they will take notes. They will tag. They will put my Instagram account. Hit me up with any questions you guys have.
SuperK_MD.
Yeah.
We'll put it in the description as well.
Free first consultations.
I agree that. I agree that dating is a little bit misguided now.
Do tell.
Because you overthink it.
A lot of people only date for like the experience of
right now. Like, what kind of things do they want to experience?
It is okay. Everybody dates for the reason, you know, back to what I was saying earlier. Everybody date for whatever reason they're dating. Everybody has their own values and own cultures.
So you allow the experiences to come and you have your reasons. If their reason isn't the same, then you'll live the moment and then... But well, you stay focused on what your values are.
I think you have to be respectful to who you are as a person, what your values are, and also respect the person you're with. And if you recognize that your values do not align, and you have the insight that nothing good is going to come out of it, to end it. Don't stream people along.
That's right. Took me a long ass time to figure that out. Took me a very long time.
And that is okay. I mean, you know, it is okay to make mistakes, dude. It is okay to fail. It is okay to not know the answers. It is okay. And you know, dude, I can go off and talk about this for hours, but... We are also glorifying always being right and not allowing room for mistakes. When I have medical students on my team in the hospital, on my very first day, I tell them, I do not care if you're right. In fact, I want to hear the wrong stuff you say, because that's how you learn. That's how I know this is wrong. And I'm not criticizing you. I'm teaching you. But it is okay to be wrong.
Yep. So are you currently in a relationship?
Ladies, all the ladies out there, I'm currently single and ready to mingle.
Let's go. What about your parents?
What about them? They're married?
No, but do they expect you to get married soon? I mean, you're 30?
Listen, every parent out there, I don't know if every parent, but I can tell you most Lebanese parents, or
especially, you know, being the oldest, they gotta want grandkids by now.
They want their kids to be happy. Everybody wants their kids to be happy,
but they want to be happy.
Yeah, everybody, and they want to be happy, and that's another thing. Like, your happiness is all interconnected. Yeah. You want your parents to be happy. Yeah. Your parents want you to be happy. You want your wife to be happy. Your wife wants you to be happy. You want your kids to, it's all interconnected. Sometimes we have to stop thinking about ourselves and think about our parents, our kids, our spouses. But also, and the reason you do that is not because you're being selfless and not thinking about yourself. It comes back to you, because in the end of the day, it makes you happy. Because you know deep inside, if your wife is happy, you're happy. Until your values are getting crossed. And that is very important. You sit down with whoever you're sitting down with, a friend, a family member, a spouse, and you clarify values. And sometimes you gotta, you know, some values are set in stones and some are not.
So how
and has... So those are not, you compromise and you meet halfway. There's a relationship with anything is a compromise. You start to understand what you want to anchor and what you want to compromise.
So how have your parents' values on marriage aligned with yours? And how are you dealing with that situation?
We both believe in, we all believe in marriage. I believe in marriage.
But are they have they talked to you about, you know, hey, Khaled, you should be looking to settle down?
They don't tell me you should. They ask me what's going on. They insinuate, you know, it's time for me to think about it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not the action, it's more of the thought. And that is okay, because they don't know what's going on in your mind. My parents are all the way out in California. I'm all the way out here. So they don't know what's going on in my mind unless we communicate.
Right.
And I tell them what I'm thinking and whatnot. And if I'm ready, I'm ready. If I'm not, I'm not. If I found the person, great. You know? But they do talk about it. And I just say, you know, I haven't found the right one. And I do not settle. Every parent has, you know, they worry about their kids. Sometimes they see things that you don't see because you might be blinded with lust or love or whatever it is. And they could see things. Heck, your friends can see things in your own relationship, and they will advise you. If you know your friends are true and good friends, and you know who you're hanging out with, like we all know who are friends or who are not. Your boy you party out at night and at 2 a.m, and you buy a table with, is probably not your friend because you don't know where he is the next day. But your friend that is next to you, dealing with your hangover the next day, he is a true friend. And he tells you or she tells you this relationship is not good for you. At the end of the day, it is your choice. It is your decision. But take a second and think about it. Why? Why they're saying that? Is it out of jealousy because they want that relationship? Or is there something more deeper into it? You know, and that's why you listen. This is, I'm telling you, this is the most amount I've ever talked. I'm the one who's usually asking the questions and, you know, but good stuff, guys. Good questions. I commend you on all these questions. Very, very good questions.
What's your biggest lesson?
Sorry?
Since you've talked so much on relationships and love, what's the biggest lesson you would want to share with all our listeners?
Don't overthink it. I'm not an expert on love. I'm like every other
boy. You know who's a big overthinker on love?
I know who is. But, you know, I think it's the important thing is to relax and be human. But I'm by no means an expert on love. I'm not certified to talk about it. I'm talking about my own experiences.
So more of a serious question. So, you know, in theme with the name of our podcast, would you consider yourself a semi-American?
So here's, you know, I've been listening to your podcast for a while, and I've taken a lot of time thinking about the name of the podcast. And to be honest, your name of the podcast is pretty provocative when you first listen to it. Mm-hmm. And you wonder, wait, what do you mean by semi-American? And it forces a listener to think. And this is what I thought of. there's over 360 million Americans in the United States of America. And they're all semi-American. There's no one who's 100% American. Because what makes you 100% American? What definition is that? Our forefathers that came to this country, wrote the Constitution, set up the government. Are they 100% American?
They're originally English.
They spoke in an English accent, probably.
Yeah.
They were English, exactly. So does that make them 100%? What is 100% American? I joke with my roommate, partly joke, partly serious. He's from Buffalo, New York. Shout out to him. And I tell him I'm more American than he is. He goes crazy. He's like, how are you more American than I? I'm like, dude, I am. He's like, well, where are you born? I'm born in Lebanon. What? That doesn't mean anything. I know more about American history than you do, dude. And then we start quizzing each other, and obviously I win, but but you know, what is it to me? And America, it's not a melting pot. When people hear it's a melting pot, it is not a melting pot of cultures. I like to say it's a tossed salad. Because once you have a melting pot,
it all becomes the same.
Yes, you lose the culture, the smaller cultural identities.
Yeah, and yeah. Makes the differences.
Exactly.
It gives you the flavor when you're
exactly
you're biting
the
into
whole
the salad.
Bowl. The whole bowl is American.
Yeah.
Right. And in that bowl, all the different ingredients are all the different cultures that makes up the entire salad, the entire bowl as being America.
Tossed salads.
Tossed salad, baby.
I love it.
All day, all night.
Yeah. All day, all night.
Yeah. For all the vegans and vegetarians out there, holla at you, boy.
And I think that's a wonderful way to wrap it up. Thank you to Dr. Khaled Kabara for joining us. This is the Semi-Americans Podcast. Shout outs to all our listeners, as usual, all across the world. Khaled, do you want to go ahead and sign us off, man? Because you got it, man.
Hey guys, I want you guys to spread the word around. Have your friends, your friends' friends, your friends' friends' friends watch and listen to Semi-American Podcast. Have your grandmother, your grandchild, your neighbor, your dog walker put on the podcast while you're walking, running,
and the dogs
driving.
Too. Yeah, we're for the
everybody.
Pets as well.
And
yeah.
Honestly, there's so much to learn from every one of these wonderful gentlemen out here. And keep listening.
Appreciate having you on, Khaled. Definitely learned a lot.
Pleasure thank you for making
here.
The
thank
time.
You.
Yeah, thank sure. you for making the time. This was definitely a learning experience. And this is honestly what we're about is like sharing perspectives, sharing each other's viewpoints and kind of getting the best out of it.
And keep loving people. All of you guys. Keep loving.
Everybody on the spectrum.
It's all about love.
All
about
love, right?
All the love.
Yeah. Episode 2, episode 3. Next time. Let's go.
Let's go.
Peace.
Let's go!